Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Boom! So welcome, I'm Chris Grimes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. Today is a very special Leadership Reflections episode because I've got someone who's an extraordinary leader with lots of leadership reflections to reflect. This is Gina Gardiner, and she is a radical change catalyst, leadership advisor and speaker, 2 times international best-selling author, and very juicily, if that was not enough, she's also a syndicated radio host on Brushwood Media Network, which transmits mostly across the United States, but globally, I gather. And I had the great privilege of guesting on Gina Gardiner and Friends this very morning. So as you said yourself, Gina, this morning, this is great. She's having a Chris Grimes day, but I'm having a Gina Gardiner day. And it's a wonderful garden to be in. So you're very, very welcome. I think the Queen of Leadership is a mantle I'm going to refer to you as being henceforward. So Gina Gardiner, welcome to the Good Listening To Show.
Thank you for joining me to the show. And also thank you for crowning me Queen of Leadership. That's a title that I'm going to keep.
Wonderful. We have Jill Tiny from Collaboration Global in common too. And so we're in a network where it's all about collaboration. And this is a reciprocal arrangement where I've been on your wonderful show. And it's going to be such a delight and privilege. You blew so much happy smoke at what I'm trying to achieve through this storytelling structure, particularly the Legacy Life Reflection series strand I'll talk about at the end. But I'm particularly excited to talk to you because of your reflections on leadership through your very wonderful career thus far. You certainly have a very interesting story to tell. So let's get you on the open road. If someone doesn't have a frame of reference for you, what's your favourite way, Gina, of describing your own cut and thrust of what you do?
I think one of my clients said it for me. It was two clients. One who said that I have the capacity to see the potential in people even when they don't see it themselves. And another client said to me, you know, you're half hugger and you're half ass kicker. And I think that probably describes me.
And are those your websites? Half hug, half ass kick.com is where Gina Gardiner comes in.
I ought to look on GoDaddy and see if that's available.
I think we should both rush there now, which is fantastic. Well, that was my idea first, obviously. So just talk us through your book empire as well, and also your link tree. At the very end, do look at Gina Gardiner's link tree, because you've got such an empire of leadership and different really wonderful things you're achieving in your cut and thrust.
Yeah, I mean, I've got over 30 books that I've written, but probably the two how-to manuals in terms of leadership, which is Kickstart Your Career and How to Manage Your Staff More Effectively. And they were my first two books, and they really are the sort of things you can pick up if you've got a problem and you need to have a difficult conversation, or you want to chair a meeting, or you're trying to deal with young members of staff that you need to engage and induct. And then the other one, which is around my lessons for life, really, which is Thriving Not Surviving, the 5 Secret Pathways of Happiness, Success and Fulfillment. And they're the principles I've learned to live by, and they're the ones that I would use around my clients. And although many of my clients are business clients, we are the common denominator. We take ourselves into every moment of every day. And so the lessons for life are also lessons for leadership.
Yes. And indeed, you've got some profound lessons of life that I know we're going to get into. We've had an extraordinary, I've thoroughly enjoyed researching you, and it's been a really wonderful path and journey to get you to this point, to welcome you to the Clearing of the Good Listening To Show.
Thank you.
So just to blow a bit of context, as you know, if you've not seen one of these shows before, where have you been? I've done about 275 of these monkeys now. But this is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing as they all come to share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And as I've already said, Gina Gardner's here, particularly with a cut and thrust of a leadership reflections. Let's get you on the open road. There's going to be a clearing, a tree, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, alchemy, gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. Hurrah. Any questions before we start?
No, I'm all ready to go.
And it's not a memory test. I'll curate you through it. It's a bit like doing a lovely slalom downhill slope, and I'll pull you in through various gates of storytelling. How marvellous. So your clearing is your serious happy place. Where would you say Gina Gardner goes to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
It's my garden. I call my garden the window of my soul. And although it's not very big, it's very colourful, and I use it to de-stress, to fill my batteries. You'll find out from later in my story, mobility has been an issue for me for many years. So whilst I love being out in nature, and under other circumstances, I might say by the sea or by water or up the mountain, for me, the garden's always accessible. And even when I can't physically get outside, I'm sitting in my garden room and I'm overlooking my courtyard. I've got an internal courtyard. It's full of colour. Or I can go into my front garden. And for me, being able to see the different forms, the different colours, the different textures, and I change those season by season by the planting that I do, although architecturally there's stuff there all the time. It's not about sitting in the garden for me. It's about getting my hands dirty. It's about being part of that nature. And when I do that, that's when I de-stress, but that's when also I feel the greatest connection to my inner wisdom and consciousness.
And of all the names to have, Gina Gardner, you've thought that through. The fact you're clearing is literally your garden and you are the gardener. It is a fantastic clearing and totally apposite and appropriate.
Although the spelling is a little different. Yeah, I know where you're coming from. And anybody can find some small space, whether that's a window box or just looking at the clouds, whatever your physical situation, whatever your financial situation, a space outside where you can connect with nature is open to us all.
And may I ask where it went wrong with the spelling? Not in your case, but in terms of your family history and gardener versus gardener.
I have no idea, actually. There is some talk that it was a derivative that people, in many ways, lots of names are like this, where people couldn't spell and the person who was recording the spelling decided to be a little creative. But it is interesting. I am often called gardener, but it's actually gardener. For me, it doesn't matter, other than if you want to get hold of me, it's easier to get the right spelling. but being out in the garden, my mum was a great gardener. In fact, the only rows my mum and dad had were around when my dad got a pair of secateurs because he didn't know when to stop. And they would have a row about, Peter, I had a wonderful cherry tree until you got at it. What have you done? As three stumps stood up. But yeah. My garden.
Perfect clearing. And I'm now going to arrive with a tree in your clearing. Yes. I don't know if you've got a tree in your garden. You described it as a courtyard, but I'm not sure if I'm picturing a tree there or not yet.
I've got a courtyard. I've also got a front garden. And yes, I've got a couple of trees in my front garden.
And I'm assuming you're going to let me into your back garden, and your courtyard is where I'm hoping to go with my tree. I'm going to shake your tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples? And this is where you've been kind enough to have thought about, you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention. When I get onto that, I'll talk about squirrels briefly. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Gina Gardner. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So reassuringly, as I described already, it's not a memory test, but let's go back into shake the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
So the first one I would say is my upbringing. I had parents who had an incredible work ethic and a father who, if you said that you were a bit fed up, a bit bored, didn't feel very well, his response to that is go and do something useful, ideally for somebody else. And whilst it's been an interesting principle to live by, in many ways incredibly powerful and positive, but in another way, I took it to an art form and forgot all about health and looking after oneself. And so professionally, it's been incredibly powerful and positive. At times, in terms of my health, perhaps not so good. But ultimately, I had parents who valued learning probably above pretty well anything else in terms of how you develop yourself. And that I've been a lifelong learner. And I'm very grateful. My parents were, in very different ways, inspirational. They were quite tough for us. I was brought up in a very different generation. But I think that's where I started to learn resilience. And certainly that's been a gift that's helped me throughout my lifetime, really.
So no lying around feeling sorry for yourself. This is get up, contribute, carry on.
Definitely. We hear a lot about anxiety and depression these days, and I do not want to make light of it. But I know from my own situation and from other people that if you can take the attention off what's not working for you and go and do a random act of kindness, or you can go and help someone else, whilst it's important you don't take it to an art form, there's nothing quite like engaging with other people and doing it in a way that you feel makes a positive difference to help you feel better about yourself.
And very profound, rather than wallowing in self-pity, not that you ever were, but as an expression, and an adage I really like, it: the difference in life between what you want and what you get is what you do. So it's very much the proactivity and the action towards that will bring about change or movement.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We all have challenges in our life, and I've worked with people who've had the most profound challenges of abuse, you know, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, people who have been made redundant, lost somebody that they love, who have lost their business, have been made bankrupt. I mean, I've dealt with other people as well, but, you know, those sort of life-changing situations. And I talk to people about the fact it's not the challenge that's going to define you. It's what are you going to do with it? How are you going to look for the gift? And whilst at the moment, that moment when life is really tricky, it's often hard to see the gift. What's interesting is when people then look back, having done the inner work, how they see that actually that the very thing that they found so profoundly difficult has shaped them in a way that they're then grateful for.
And I hope we're going to get onto something much more specific about your own path. When I used an analogy earlier on about pulling you down a ski slope slalom race, not a race, but through some gates of storytelling, I know that you've got an extraordinary story, which I don't doubt you're going to get onto about challenges to your own health, shall we say.
Yes. So that would be my first leaf that's fallen. And ultimately, I think we are all products of our upbringing. That can be positive, negative, neutral, and a mixture of all three. But for me, because of what happened, I think that upbringing, that particular principle of get up and get on, for me was a lifesaver. So the second one would, I think, be lots of things in between, but in terms of profound, I was a keen skier. I had been appointed to be a deputy head or principal of a large school very early. I was appointed to be the deputy. I was 28. And I was appointed to be the catalyst for change. In fact, when I went to look for the job, the head teacher turned around and said, "We don't want you, we want a man." Very different times. We're talking about 1982 at this time. I'm not quite sure why, but I decided to apply anyway. I think I thought it was good practice. And on the day of the interview, I was told, "You realize that if there's a man that's your equal, he'll get the job. You've got to be better than anybody that's there. Otherwise, it's not going to work." I got the job. Incidentally, the acting deputy, a woman, was told not to apply because he was going to appoint a man. So I was persona non gratis when I arrived. Youngest on the staff bar two, and literally appointed to bring in ideas and to move the school forward. It wasn't a bad school, but it was very, very old fashioned. And you can appreciate, I was 28 at that time. I was the youngest bar two by a long way. Most of the staff were in their late 50s and 60s.
And you described it as being old school. And of course, that defining attitude at the beginning, the first impression, was incredibly old school. And, you know, hopefully 1982 is the last time that presented, but we both know that that's not the case.
No, unfortunately not. Now, I was a keen skier at this time, and I used to ski two or three times a year. I'd rather ski than have a summer holiday. God knows why. I don't like the cold. I don't like heights. And I'm not very sporty, but I loved it. And in those days, it was very much the fashion to have skis as long as possible. So I had a new pair of skis for Christmas, and I allowed the man in the shop to convince me that instead of the 4 or 5 centimetres longer that I had initially thought I would buy, he convinced me I needed an extra 10 centimetres. Went off skiing February half term, having spent the first 6 months of the school year planning strategically how we were going to move forward. And I went skiing with 4 friends, and with my previous skis, we were all very much on a par. But because I kept on wrapping those 10 centimetres around my neck, I was tail end Charlie and I kept falling. And on the Thursday of a week's holiday, I had a really nasty fall and I ripped my brand new ski suit from thigh to ankle and my earring went through my ear and I really shook myself up. So I said to my friends, "I'm not going to ski with you tomorrow. I'm going to get my confidence back." And they said, "Well, okay, we'll meet you for lunch." And when we met, they said, "We found this fabulous 6-kilometer run. Come and join us." And so I did. It was one of those amazingly beautiful days that you get in the mountains. It was February, late February. The sun was shining. The snow was glistening. It was just magnificent. And we went up on the chairlift. And as we went up from the village looked like a miniature village and you could just hear the shh of people skiing past. And we got off and I followed them. And we'd been going perhaps about 5 minutes when we turned a corner and I was behind them catching up. And when I caught them up, it was pretty evident that we weren't where they thought they were supposed to be. So instead of it being a 6-kilometer red run, it was a black diamond run. Now, those of you that don't ski, ski slopes go from green That's for learning. Blue, red, black. Black diamond is for idiots and foolhardy. There was no way back. And so we had to traverse this huge mogul field. Now, a mogul is where the snow has been eroded by the wind and the rain, and it's a lump. And some of these are like cobbles. These were 6-foot monsters. And the only way to ski was to turn on the top of the mogul and slide down and then go along and then turn and do the same. And there was powder snow either side. So I skied the first third successfully. I was an experienced skier and I'd done plenty of black runs, but I hadn't done anything like this before. And then I left it too late to turn and I had a nasty fall. And it took me about 20 minutes to retrieve my ski and then ski down to where the other four were sitting, each on a mogul, rather like an elf sitting on a mushroom. Took my skis off and we were talking. And I think where my mogul had been exposed to the sun for longer, I suddenly found myself to be falling. And there was nowhere to land because it was so steep and because of these moguls. And the last thing I remember is a scream. That was me. And then everything went black. I came to, I have no idea how long it was, but I'd found in that rolling down and down and down, I'd found somewhere flat enough for me to land. Eventually, my friends skied down to me. They wanted to call the blood wagon. I was just as insistent that they weren't to do that. And the one good thing about it is that with the two falls and the skiing, I was pretty much at the bottom of the slope and we were very close to the hotel. So they helped me back to the hotel and I was in a bit of a state, but we traveled home the next day. Fortunately, in one way, we were traveling by coach, so I didn't have to do anything apart from get on the coach. And I arrived home and my mum took one look at me and dragged me off to A&E. And they said I'd got a bad concussion and I trapped a nerve in my neck. It took me 3 weeks to get back to school. And at this time I was still wearing a surgical collar and I wasn't right. I was just doing school and coming home and going to bed. 5 weeks later, we were due to take 150 some pupils on the borough ski trip. And I was the deputy leader. And I was told I could go because we had a medic with us. And so during the week, I skied, but I got more and more like Quasimodo as the week went on. And on the Friday, which is our last day, it was a medal day. It was foggy. It was cold. And when we got back to the hotel, I felt absolutely dreadful. And I said to my colleagues, I've got to go and lie on the bed. Went upstairs, and this was a cheap hotel. We were in bunk beds. God only knows how I got on the top bunk. But within about half an hour, I discovered that I was paralyzed down one side. The pupils were playing and talking in the corridor outside, and I didn't want to frighten them, so I waited. And I have to say that wait, and I don't really know how long it was probably the longest few minutes in my life until someone came to check on me. At that point, all hell broke loose and I was carted off to the local hospital and then to Geneva University Hospital. And I was there for just over a week and I was eventually flown home. And by that time, I could walk, but I still had some problems. And it took me about 3 months to get back to school. And I got back to school by the end of May, beginning of June. I wasn't right, but I could come in, teach, go home, go to bed. And I was really pleased to get to the summer holidays in the UK. We, as you know, if you are from the UK, we break up usually about the 20th of July and we have 6 weeks summer holidays. And I thought to myself, great, I've got 6 weeks. I can really rest and recuperate.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Eight days into the holiday, very early in the morning, we're talking about 6 o'clock in the morning, there's a phone call, unusual in itself. And when I picked up the phone, it was my head teacher, principal's wife. She was absolutely hysterical on the phone. And she had just discovered John Hughes, the head, lovely man, had died suddenly in his sleep. And so far from it being restful, I helped her organise the funeral. I had to let the staff, the parents, the local authority know. And I was then acting head. And so it was a very surreal holiday, really. And I started the term as acting head. In those days, an incumbent deputy wasn't allowed to apply for the headship. And anyway, I'd been a deputy for a year, of which I'd had 4 months off. And they advertised, they interviewed, but they didn't appoint. And then I was told that I could apply. I had no real thought that I would get the job, but I decided to put in an application. And I was really surprised after my interview in January 1984 when I was appointed to be the head. By that time, I was operating okay, but I wasn't right. And they couldn't find out what was going on. They couldn't identify why I wasn't recovering and thriving. And over the next 5 years, I had all sorts of tests and treatments. But each time I had a test or a treatment, I got worse, not better. And so by 1987, I had to start using a wheelchair around school. And that wheelchair took me from the office to the classroom. I could walk in the office, I could walk in the classroom, or I could walk in the hall, but I needed the help of the chair in between. Fast forward to 1996, I was in my garden. I was pricking out some plants. I leant across the table to pick up a seedling, and I sneezed at the same time as I stretched, and I felt something ping. And we're talking about probably 3 weeks before the end of the summer term. I was in a lot of pain. It was not unusual for me to be in pain, particularly sciatica. And anybody who's had sciatica knows how challenging that can be. But I literally limped along till the end of term. And on the last day, I was doing the last assembly. And I had a high stool in assembly, which I used anyway, because I couldn't stand for more than a minute or two. Did assembly, said goodbye to everybody, got off my stool as the hall cleared, and I couldn't stand up. So I was taken to the GP, who said I'd slipped a disc. Went to bed. The next morning, I could not move. I phoned a friend who came. I was taken to hospital. To cut a long story short, eventually they did a scan, and they discovered that a disc had exploded.
Oh,
and so Gordon, I was taken to surgery. When I came to, and the first time I went to stand up, as I put my left foot to the floor, so I would faint. And when I spoke to the surgeon, his comment was, "My dear, the operation was a complete success. It's you who are the failure." But the reality was, I could not put any weight through my left foot without fainting. And so it took several blocks before I could actually manage to put my foot through the, on the floor. And so it took 18 months for me to walk to the end of a very different garden, because I've moved since then, but very small garden. And for the rest of the time, I had to use a wheelchair. Now, I'd used a wheelchair to get around school, but I'd always been able to get into the classrooms. But by this time, I couldn't physically get into any of the classrooms. Either couldn't get them through the door, or I couldn't get the wheelchair around the classroom. And so I was established as a head. And for me, what was important, and I'd made a decision when I applied for the headship, however I was physically, wasn't going to get in the way of creating the very best, happiest, most successful education experience that I could for not only the pupils, but for the teachers. And I'd worked in two schools where that was not the case, and I was determined that that would be the case. And so this didn't happen in a sequential line, but I had to find a way of empowering my staff to take radical responsibility for their performance and a shared responsibility for the whole staff. It was highly successful.
And radical responsibility is something that I know is your main cut and thrust of leadership. Sorry to interrupt you. I have to ask at this point, at what cost getting up, turning up, showing up? Because lesser mortals would have just lay down to recover. You pushed yourself in an extraordinary way. That's a really clear.
So if I may continue in terms of the story, because 2 years, almost to the day when I ruptured the first disc, it was the last day of a summer term, I was sick and I ruptured a second disc. I had surgery, again, failed back surgery. Remember, I'd learnt to walk again. This time, I was completely and utterly wheelchair bound. I couldn't stand, so I had to use a transfer board. Now, I was in hospital for 7-8 weeks. I got out of hospital the Friday before bank holiday weekend in August. I was back at school part-time on the Wednesday of the week of bank holiday Monday. And you asked me what was it that enabled me to carry on? I had a really stark choice. If nobody had left out a cup or filled the kettle, I could not make a cup of tea. I could do daytime television, or I could read at home. Or I could go into school, and it was organized so somebody would help me get into the taxi and get from the taxi into school. I already had an electric wheelchair at school. I had people there who could hand me whatever I needed if I couldn't get it myself. But I could do something I loved that I felt was my purpose. My brain worked, my mouth has never stopped working, my hands, my ears worked, or I could be at home and be disabled. And so my choice was, if I can go and do something and be useful and not be a burden to the school, why wouldn't I? So when 5 or 6 months later, the consultant said to me, "I think we might talk about you going back into school a couple of hours a week," I just laughed. I'd had 3 weeks part-time, and on the fourth week, I started back full-time. So the thought that I could actually be useful, go and do something really that made a positive difference, for me has always been the thing that's kept me going.
Yes.
And so I ran my school for over 20 years. And for the most part, I ran my school from the wheelchair. The gift of that was creating a unique approach to the personal development and empowerment and leadership. And in terms of how it helped people at school, teachers, pupils, parents, those are the principles that I've used since I went into and started my own business in 2004, or 2005, really, that ultimately it's our choice how we turn up. It's our choice how we engage. And going back to our much earlier conversation, I'd like to think that I would have created a very similar approach to the development of people and potential. But I'm honest enough to know that if I hadn't had the disability and had to find a different way, I'd have probably done it very differently, been very much more traditional in the approach, much more interfering, if you like. But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And the interesting thing is how powerful an approach it is, whether you are a child, a pupil, a teacher, a client, a business leader, because it is about how do you turn up moment by moment. So one of the principles within the school is, doesn't matter what your job is, whether you're a cleaner or you're a secretary or the head or the deputy, you are the leading professional in your role. Are you turning up and being the leading professional? Are you being the best you could be? And so a big part of that was having a shared understanding of what does excellence look like in the context of each thing, relationship, lesson planning, lesson delivery. And though that principle has worked since I started with businesses.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of the series strands is called Leadership Reflections, for business leaders or those of you that work in the leadership domain to be able to share your leadership lessons learned along your way. Maybe you'd like to play it forward as you move from one leadership opportunity to the next. Maybe you're about to stop and you'd like to drop the mic to preserve your leadership legacy, or you may just want to consolidate where you already are as you share your leadership reflections. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.